The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Tilda, the Irish Longitudinal Study on Ageing, has announced today that it has received the designation from the World Health Organization as a collaborating centre. And it means they're going to form part of an international network set up by the World Health Organization aiming to address global challenges around ageing populations. Regius Professor Roseanne Kenny is the founding principal investigator of Tilda, which of course is Ireland's largest adult population study on the experience of ageing in Ireland. And she joins me now. Roseanne, this is a particularly interesting area to be in at present because ageing is one of the most significant issues, not just in Ireland, but around the world.
Aye, absolutely. I mean, there's a huge demographic shift in that context. Fertility rates are dropping, yet the world is getting older. And that's going to continue, Anton, right through to the start of the next millennium and beyond, escalating all of the time. So it is a major issue, and the WHO recognises this. It has an ambition, and it's declared this for 60% of the world's countries, to have a study similar to Tilda by 2030. So that's a very big ask. But unless you have data and information such as we collect, it's very difficult to develop policy or to understand the process in different countries.
Give us an insight into the kind of data that you collect, because I suspect there will be a view that says that age is a function of fate and one just lives with it, whereas your study reveals it's much more controllable than we might think.
Absolutely. So what we do know is that 20 or at the most 30% of our aging process is due to genes, and we can't do much about our genes. We're born with them. But the rest, 70, 80% is under our control. What that means is if we understand the factors soon enough, which govern how we age and why we age, then we can actually modify them. And a shocking figure, I think, is that we spend one in every 5 years of our entire lives with disability. So our ambition is to reduce that right down to half that. So it's one in every 10 years of our lives is spent with disability. Of course, that occurs mostly towards the end of our lives, those last number of years, but it's still 20% of our lifespan. So it's how can we actually crack that? And it is modifiable. That's what we can control.
Modifiable by the individual or modifiable by the health system or a combination of both?
Absolutely. Great question. Both. Both, clearly. So the individual needs to be aware, needs to know how to, you know, exercise. I know these are the old chestnuts, but they really, really are important. You know, regular exercise. And I tell people and patients, after the age of 50, don't say, oh, it's my age. Don't do less, do more. Every year, year on year, after 50, in the context of physical exercise. And in particular, strengthening and balance exercises. Walking isn't enough. The other thing is diet, good diet. Cut out ultra-processed foods entirely. They're really bad for our system. And they're much more likely to lead to diabetes. And diabetes accelerates, speeds up the aging process. So cut out ultra-processed foods. And then other things are social engagement, friendship. Loneliness or social isolation is very, very toxic. So that's something we can start on early. So they're just three big hitters.
The last of those, loneliness and its impact on ageing. There was a recent study that revealed that Ireland has some of the highest rates of loneliness in the Western world. How does it feed into, I can understand how it feeds into mood. How does it feed into age?
Yeah. So what loneliness does is it triggers an inflammatory process in the body. Actually, within cells, biologically, it influences how those cells react and act. And inflammation is probably the major contender for why we age.
I read a number of years ago the Harvard study, and at the end of it, it is distilled effectively into three things if you want to maintain a long and happy life: active engagement in the community, finding someone you love who loves you, and not drinking too much. Do those findings still hold true in your research?
Absolutely. That's well remembered, but they are the three key things from that study. And actually, that resonates very closely with what I have just said. Excessive alcohol is also very bad for the system, and, you know, causes a whole lot of cardiovascular and metabolic consequences. So everything in moderation. But I would say the diet and physical activity and so and working on your social networks and social engagement are really, really important. We did have the highest reported rates of loneliness and social isolation. I think it's because we've changed so rapidly after the over the last number of decades. You know, when, with the Celtic Tiger, that hugely changed our social infrastructure in Ireland. And then we had the recession, and now we're coming back again. So it would be terrific if we could actually build in some ways of managing social isolation and loneliness into everything across governmental departments, so that, that people were aware that that is a big issue. Housing, you know, social activities, not to make them accessible. Maybe even consider free gyms for people over a certain age, or much reduced cost, certainly, for that sort of activity, which is really good for health, makes a big impact on social engagement.
And I assume to some extent there is a mercenary incentive to do those kind of things, because it is less expensive to provide free services to an older person than it is to have them move into acute hospital care.
Absolutely. And it's the health and social costs of this are a major consequence, you asked, at a societal and government level. Of course they are. And they're escalating all of the times. And I would almost say that at the moment, our health service can hardly deal with the demographic change, although we've known it's been coming for some long period of time. So we need to think outside the box, and we need to think of new models of service delivery, which actually we've been able to introduce some of those through our learnings in the Tilda study.
How good is the hospital system and the health system generally at dealing with aging? Because many of the issues for a geriatric patient may be multifactorial, each of which is dealt by a specialism. Are we good at that total holistic care of the elderly?
So, well, first of all, what I would say is that nearly all of our patients now who are being admitted to hospital are adults or older patients. Okay, that's the first thing. So everybody's dealing with older patients. And you're quite right in that as we get older, we have multiple conditions, not just one isolated condition. So a 20-year-old could have a heart problem, but a 70-year-old will have a heart problem, but other issues as well going on. So it's important to have a multi-focused lens when looking after older persons. So we are trying to work less in silos and more in a cohesive way in that context. That's exactly what geriatricians do. Our own study has shown what the links are with those morbidities, what diseases cluster most together, and that's in the context of new models of service delivery, such as multi-focus clinics rather than isolated clinics, but also a one-site, one-stop model. Because our data has shown that people over the age of 80 reduce, their numbers reduce in the context of outpatients, for example. And when we've explored that further with focus groups, etc., it's because they can't stand coming to hospital. It's so difficult to navigate outpatients. And for exactly as you've cited, it's all so siloed. So they go one place here and then another day here and another day there. And it's just too much to navigate. So one site, one stop, multi-focused systems are very important. Personally, I think hospitals are reorientating towards that and trying to change their systems. We still do find ageism, even in the medical system. There's no question about that. But obviously, we're trying to do something about raising awareness about ageism and how ageism in our health system is really bad for our country.
Given what you say about the level of complexity that comes with age, what's the implications of that for Tilda? Because I assume you could bite off more than you can chew in terms of study aging.
So it's a very comprehensive study in that we study not just health, but economics and the social circumstances also, because none of these occur in isolation. If your health goes off, it isn't just one disease entity that deteriorates. There's a whole other knock-on effect. Economics and social sciences play very much into all of that. So we gather all of that information, and that's what the WHO wants other countries to do, to have that omnibus approach to the healthy aging process. And then we do subjective and objective health measures. What do I mean by that? I ask you, do you have high blood pressure? Do you have high cholesterol? And then we found that 48% of men, for example, aged 50 to 64, when we measured their blood pressure, who had high blood pressure on measurement, were not aware of it. So that unmet need is a very important metric that we can give to policymakers to say, okay, these are the age groups who aren't aware that they have these modifiable conditions. That's what I mean by modifiable, things we can do something about. And something like high blood pressure, one of the commonest causes of stroke, of heart failure, of dementia. So, you know, it's really important to be aware of those disorders, to treat them early, because they're all treatable. And at the end of the day, two things matter to us. When you say to somebody, what do you want when you're 90, 95, 100? I want to be free to move around. I want my mobility. And I want my memory. And they're really important, because if you've got your memory, you have every other capacity that your brain can deliver. So mobility and memory is what we're targeting. And we can manage all of the other diseases and conditions behind the scenes.
You listed health, economics, and also the social studies and things. What in the latter? What has the study revealed to you about how aging is perceived and how older people are perceived and treated?
So we ask how people think their own aging perceptions are, actually. And that's very interesting, because if you perceive yourself to be younger than your years, you actually age more slowly when we look at biological aging in subsequent years. So you might say, how can that possibly be, that your mindset could influence your physical status? But again, it's back to the inflammatory system. When we look behind the biomarkers that are indicating those deliverables, we find that it is the case that people who perceive themselves to be younger slow down their inflammatory process, which is the underlying process with aging. And that's independent of everything else. You might say, but they perceive themselves to be younger because they didn't have any diseases or disorders or problem at the time. But we are able to adjust for all of that. And not only our group, but others have replicated this work. So you are as young as you feel.
So willful denial keeps you younger.
It's not so much denial as positivity, I would say. You know, if you feel younger than your years, that's a good thing. Now, if you have ageism in society and you're constantly being bombarded by negative ageist messages, it's very hard to maintain those positive perceptions of aging. So it's not just about awareness within the individual, but it's a bigger societal thing that we are obligated to actually change the approach to the whole aging process.
Well, that was the thing that I found interesting about a lot of the way that Joe Biden was talked about, because Joe Biden might have had an issue to do with competence and capacity, but it was characterized entirely as, well, he's 80.
Yeah.
I think if I was 80 and sharp as a tack, I would find that deeply insulting.
Absolutely. And we got so much feedback in that context, actually, at that time. There was a lot of negative language being used around Joe Biden at the time. Very ageist language. And one colleague in the UK said to me, this whole issue has set us back two decades in the context of how we approach ageing and perceptions of ageing.
It is obviously a great feather in the cap for the WHO to be treating tilde the way that it is. Can you explain the connection and explain how the link will work?
They approached us, first of all. So yes, it is a great feather in our cap. They liked the model of the study. And actually, when we were setting up tilde, we had to start an awful lot of things de novo in Ireland. There wasn't the infrastructure there to run a study like this. So we had to reinvent the wheel and establish a lot of new stuff. And that pertains to many of the countries who will now require a longitudinal study on aging. And I think that the WHO had insights into that. Basically, we will work very closely with them in sharing with other countries our model of developing tilde, and help them design the study, navigate the study, understand the complexities, understand what they will need in order to set a study up like this, all of the GDPR and HRR, the health regulation issues, etc. So we have a very skilled team who will now assist other countries worldwide with developing their own longitudinal studies in ageing.
And am I right in saying Ireland is probably a good test bed for such a study, because our size and demographic and geographic demographic diversity in a relatively small area is probably handy compared to an America or a Germany or a bigger country.
So again, that's a great observation, because when we started Tilda back in 2006, we were not as diverse as a community if for people over 50. Now what we have is those 50 and above, because that's our lower cutoff in the study, 45, 50. We find that there's much more diversity in Ireland. So we are seeing our country's change being reflected now in the participants in our study. And we will be able to actually look at those different cohort effects of the study.
For people listening, is there anywhere that you can access the Tilda output or Tilda research on a rolling basis?
We have a website, tilda.ie, and if you go onto the website, we have all of our publications and processes and different reports that we've done.
Roseanne Kenny, thank you very much. That is Regius Professor Roseanne Kenny, founding principal investigator of Ireland's largest adult population study on the experience of ageing in Ireland, that being Tilda, and Tilda now being a model for the WHO.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.